From the land to Grand Hue University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of March 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at agmarket.net in New Market, Indiana. We'll also discuss the broader view and context of the export market, acreage as well, with Ben Brown from MU Extension, agricultural economist at FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, and Don Day will be here to take a look at the weather forecast, as well as Dave Chatterton to talk about the agricultural energies on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $6.30, down 3. July at $6.11 1/4, 4 1/4 lower. December futures, that's the new crop, at $5.56 3/4, down 3 1/4. May soybeans at $14.67, 19 cents lower. They're high today, by the way, at $14.97, just shy of $15. July contract at $14.48 1/2, down 18 1/4. In November at $12.96, down 13 cents. Bean meal at $460.60, down $2.10. The bean oil for the day at $56.24, $1.75 lower on the afternoon. July soft red winter wheat, 16 cents lower at $6.92 1/2. The hard red off just about half of that at 8 1/2 lower at $8.06 3/4 in the July harvest month contract. Live cattle futures at $156.15, up 62 1/2. Feeders up 40 cents, $199.55 the settlement price, and lean hogs at $91.35 per 100 pounds, down there 52 1/2 cents. Crude oil, $69.60 a barrel, $1.78, and the gasoline at $2.50 4/10 cents, just about unchanged on this Tuesday afternoon. It's National Ag Day. By the way, Amy Bradford from GrowMark, from right here in Illinois, is the chair of the Agriculture Council of America. That's the national organization charged with promoting National Ag Day. We're very proud of Amy and all the work that she's done. And she says National Ag Day reminds everyone that safe, affordable, abundant, and nutritious food that they depend on every day comes to them thanks to the hard work and resilience of American farmers and ranchers. In celebration of National Ag Day, thank you to the farmers and ranchers listening to our program right here on Illinois Public Media. Now let's turn our attention to that marketplace we've already talked about just a little bit, at least the numbers, with Wayne Nelson of agmarket.net. Hi, Wayne. Happy National Ag Day to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here today, Todd. And it looked like it was going to be a happy day when we started out this morning. We had green on the screen, and it looked awfully promising until later.
Yeah, it looked not too bad, and then soybeans faded. What happened?
Well, I think, first of all, we started off with no bank failures, so everybody's a little bit positive this morning. Nothing seeming to go bad that way. Then we saw beans. They tried to go up and break through $15. When they couldn't break through $15, it's like anything. When you're attacking a technical point and it backs away and you can't do it, we saw the stuff start to sell off then. So, just a lot of things. Our export numbers have not been too exciting as of late. We did get another announcement of a flash sale on corn to China today, and that is helping. But, we're still way behind on the numbers that we anticipated at the beginning of the year.
What are your expectations for tonight and tomorrow?
Well, I think, we are looking forward to see what's the Fed going to do tomorrow. Is it going to be no raise? Is it going to be 0.25%? I don't think it's going to be 0.5% like someone was looking for earlier here. But we've got a lot of things in the air here talking about what is really happening and what's at stake with these banks and what's going on. And it's just something that's sort of highly upsetting to everybody because you don't really have a good feel for what is happening. A lot of people not happy about how we bailed out the California banks way above the Federal Reserve limits and that way, and what was going on. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? And did they maybe stop a real disaster, or did we just spend a lot of extra money? So that way, another thing that's up there and hanging in is what's going to happen with the Russian or the Black Sea corridor here. Ukraine says 120 days, Russia says 60, and that's going to have a lot of things, is what's happened along the way. But, you know, it's going to get a little rain in South America. Might not help what's going on here, but it can help the second crop quite a bit. We look for maybe stabilization of things tomorrow a little bit as we go along.
And then we're not too far away now from the end of the month. Of course, there'll be a grain stocks and acreage report out. I don't think anything's been put on the wires yet about what the average trade estimates are. What are your thoughts on both of those?
Well, I think something we did catch today was Informa. Their 23 crop acreage projections are 90.9 on the corn and 49.247 on the wheat and 88.2 on the beans and 10.89 on the cotton. So that's sort of my new ideas on acreage. You know, will we see with the reduction in the last report and stuff, the stocks could be a little higher. We haven't seen the exports be as good. So we are looking for maybe somewhat bigger numbers in some of the carryouts for this year, Todd.
Hey, thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Ben Brown, agricultural economist with University of Missouri Extension there at MU. And he's also with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being with us. I want to pick up a story from last week because I think it will continue, or at least the trade believes this is the case. USDA last week announced sales to China of about 83 million bushels or something along those lines. I wonder what that really means to the corn market, and then what your expectations might be across that whole export side of corn.
Absolutely, yeah. So we saw the flash sales, daily flash sales. Now those will become official in this coming week's export sales data. So I think, you know, if you were just looking at this week's sales report data, you're probably a little disappointed because you're like, wait, I thought we had more export sales than that. Because weekly corn sales last week were actually down week over week. It was, you know, it was kind of a disappointment to the market, I think, in terms that there wasn't stronger sales volumes. But we did have those 83 million bushels of flash sales, and those will become official this coming week. So certainly, some positives. And I think if you look at or positives in terms of higher corn price, at least for that old crop market, I think your point about is China done? I don't think China is done, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a while before we see more export sales or purchases of U.S. corn. I'm not sure, that we'll see it here in the next week. It could be a couple weeks before we start seeing some more corn sales to China. So I don't think they're done, but I also wouldn't be disappointed if I'm not seeing daily sales here in the next couple of weeks. As far as what this means to the overall corn market, I think for old crop corn, we had 4 days last week where old crop corn for May, finished up, and we haven't had that since back in January. And I certainly think that given just kind of the current, I guess, fundamental view of the corn market at the moment, there's reason to believe that maybe old crop corn could move higher as we head into the stocks report, that old crop corn stocks report at the end of the month, especially as we think about the fund positions and many managed money accounts have kind of worked down their net long positions of corn. So they've sold off positions, and that's put some pressure on the market as well over the last month. And so, that's kind of helped, get the fund position in a place where we shouldn't, large sales of shares or positions in the next week. And so, there's opportunity for that old crop market to be relatively stable. I think it's the new crop market that I continue to have concerns about in terms of the size, both the size of the U.S. crop. I think it could be pretty large. And then, as we look at demand for that new crop market, I think that has a tendency to also be moving softer. And so that creates larger carryout and and lower prices for that new crop market. So kind of a difference here in terms of where we're at in the old crop situation and the new crop situation, and we could see that carry out just continue to grow, or that spread between the two grow.
You mentioned very large that end of the month survey, prospective plantings report due out Friday the 31st, along with the grain stocks from farmers about what they'll plant this season, I think has the trade a little on edge. They've been starting to talk about not how many acres will be planted, but what yields will be already, in order to, I suppose, assuage fears that the market might just turn rapidly lower.
Yeah, and I think, so it's twofold, you know, in terms of, you know, size of the acres, which I think, you know, my estimate somewhere between 92.5 and 93.5 for corn. And then, of course, we had that big yield, that trend line yield from USDA come out at 81.5 million bushels, you know, or bushels per acre. You know, if you start thinking about what that could mean for an entire crop, and that leads you to a large crop. So, but before I guess we get to that, let's go back to the old crop just real quick. I had a couple of, like, one other point. You know, export inspections this year have been very slow. We got off to a slow start. They were low throughout the winter, and now as we think about spring, you know, export shipments have certainly increased, but we still remain about 140 million bushels below even the seasonal pace needed to hit USDA's target. So I go back and say, okay, yes, we've seen, you know, flash sales from China, and I think we could see more. Does that get us all the way back to normal? Probably not. Or, you know, back to the current target? Probably not. But it probably gets us closer. USDA might be pretty accurate at 1.85 billion bushels. But we also could see softness of another 25 million bushels in that market too. So again, flash sales have been coming through, but certainly there's even some more downside risk to that old crop.
So you allowed me time to do some numbers very quickly there. 92.5 million acre corn crop at just 180 bushels to the acre is what, 16.6, 16.7 billion bushels. That is a gigantic crop.
Yeah, it is. And it has, like I said, we have the potential to produce a very large crop. And, you know, I'm no weatherman. I make the joke that, you know, I can't stand to be wrong twice in the same day, so I stick with markets. But I would certainly suggest, and everything I'm hearing from even the climatologists I talk to quite often, they're talking very favorable growing season this year with increased precipitation and maybe a little bit cooler night temperatures than what we saw last year. So potential. There's the potential for, you know, a very strong crop.
Where do you want to go from here? Any place?
Yeah, let's talk about soybeans. Let's talk about the soybean side. So on the soybean side, you know, we had a counter seasonal move last week in export sales, which I think is very strong, and it's a good signal, I think, for the soybean market that you know, we continue to see old crop soybean sales even in the face of a very large Brazilian crop, and the fact that the week before we saw net cancellations, which that was early for net cancellations within the marketing year. So 24.4 million bushels sold in the most recent week of data. You know, if we look at inspections on the soybean side as well, you know, inspections continue to run about 75 million bushels higher than where USDA's increased export target is. So, you know, I think there's potential for the soybean complex to continue to see tighter ending stocks domestically here. And of course, that, you know, that also helps with old crop soybean prices. And then as we look ahead to new crop, you know, if we're talking about, you know, 92.5, 93 million acres of corn, that competes with soybean acres. And you know, we might have, you know, a soybean crop that just maintains supplies, doesn't shrink them, doesn't grow them, but just kind of maintains them. And we see a, you know, an environment with higher prices for a little bit longer. So I think on the soybean side, you know, the export market has certainly been a strength, whereas on the corn side, it's been a weakness. And then, you know, as we look ahead, it's I think I will want to see another week of strong soybean exports to say that this is a, you know, this is you know, happening rather than just kind of an anomaly, 1 week anomaly. But certainly, you know, there's potential there for a very strong year of soybean exports.
Hey, thank you much.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Brown is an agricultural economist with MU Extension, that's University of Missouri Extension, and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, otherwise known as FAPRI. Let's check the agricultural energies as we normally do on a Tuesday. Today we'll talk with Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us. I know that it's been an interesting 2 years in the energy market, but it seems like we're in a lull space today. Is that where you're thinking about things being?
Yeah. Hi, Todd. And yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. Right now, we're really not focused on the fundamental supply and demand factors of the underlying fuel market or the oil market. I think much like grain, we've been kind of captive to what the attitude and the money flow has been in these macro markets and you know, the risk associated, or the risk aversion, I should say, associated with that. So with that, we came, you know, again, similar to what we saw in grain markets, we had a 15-month low in the crude oil last week. We bounced off of that here the last couple of days here to start this week, but not necessarily in a very strong fashion. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty out there as how it relates to what oil and energy demand are going to be and what risks are still out there or may be out there for not only the banking system but the global, you know, economy as a whole and kind of where that's going to lead things. So we've seen a few of the Wall Street types. Goldman this week finally backed off this $100 crude prediction and are starting to lower their numbers a little bit. But you know, the underlying supply fundamentals here, and supply and demand fundamentals, I should say, look actually like they've improved to us here in the last couple of weeks or couple of months since we started the year. We were seeing China import near record amounts of oil. You know, their economy looks like it's getting its feet underneath it. Some of the supply issues that we've had record amount of petroleum exports going out of the U.S. here, in, you know, to start the year, and particularly this setting in the last couple of weeks. So some things that are changing, I think those fundamentals will have their day. I'm just not sure that day is going to be here this week ahead of a Fed meeting and you know, some other things going on.
The Federal Reserve is set to have its meeting, likely, I suppose, to raise the overnight lending rate another 0.25%?
Yeah, it looks like pretty high odds of that right now. If you look at the Fed fund futures, about an 82-85% expectation that tomorrow the Fed will raise rates by 25 basis points. So there's no expectation or less than 1% for a 50-point rate hike, and probably the remaining is in a no-change scenario. So most of the money is sitting on that quarter-point rate hike. Again, a situation where what's their sentiment and that goes along with that in their statements and interviews, and what does that mean for the future, and are we going to slow these rate hikes? Are they done? Are we near the peak? Is really kind of what the market is trying to judge. So, again, just another kind of fly in the ointment as far as direction and the underlying price of oil.
So that does bring me back to direction and inflation-related issues. Do farmers need to be worried about the price of fuel for the coming year?
You know, the fundamental risk, I think, if you look at where prices are at and kind of how far we've fallen and shaving, you know, really over $10 in crude just last week during the bank scare and kind of clawing some of that back here a little bit this week. But if you look at where we started the year or go back to this time last year and these prices have fallen significantly. And in that situation, I think the risk becomes skewed to the upside here. When we look at the situation around, you know, the investment, the CapEx, and the things that are going on in the oil space and keeping our production where it's at to kind of meet this demand and keep it going down the road. So there are a lot of risks, I think, in that proposition. And we know the global, you know, what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on with the tension between the U.S. and China and with Russia and different things, you know, that are out there. So those types of events are something we have to take home every night, Todd. So I don't think you have to rush out today and get all of your needs covered, but I think you want to be paying attention here and looking at some of these prices. If you look at, you know, retail diesel prices today or on-farm diesel prices, about 75 cents below where they were at this time last year. Our propane inventories have nearly doubled. We've got propane trading at under 70 cents, you know, wholesale in a few areas here in the Midwest. So definitely definitely worth putting a pencil to it.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Let's check in now with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to discuss the forecast for the coming week. Hi, Don. Thanks for being with us. Let's start a little further to the west of you on the other side of the mountain range. What are conditions like in California? They have gotten a whole lot of rainfall.
Yeah, and the hits keep coming. There's no sign that the Pacific is going to ease up anytime soon. It's just one wave after another. They're getting a significant wave of rain and snow into California and parts of the Great Basin states today. That'll be followed by another one a couple of days later. Lake Oroville, a big reservoir there in California, they're letting water out. It's going right into the ocean. Makes you want to cry. But they have to let water out because the snowmelt hasn't even started yet. And there's more coming. And the latest drought monitor that came out this past Thursday, greater than 50% of California now not in drought. So it's been quite a turnaround in really only 5 or 6 months.
So this turnaround happens very quickly. This atmospheric river that has been responsible for part of it hits the Rocky Mountains and then does what on the other side or this eastern side of them?
Well, what we've been seeing over the last 2 weeks, and we're going to see again for what's left of this week, is that what's left of these California storms has been producing occasional snow in the northern plains. North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin have been getting off and on snow. They're getting more snow here over the next 24 to 48 hours. So some of this weather is getting over the divide. Now, in areas where we really want to see it, parts of Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, eastern Colorado, parts of Nebraska where drought conditions are still pretty bad, they haven't been able to get much out of this pattern, although over the next week or two, I think that'll change. And then as these systems go further east, they are picking up moisture out of the Gulf of Mexico and becoming active again. In fact, it looks pretty wet for most of the central and eastern Corn Belt over the next 7 to 10 days. Plenty of rain in the forecast, and temperatures are still going to lag, still going to be a little bit colder than average.
From the beginning of the calendar year, I've made note, I think most of the Corn Belt is at or above their normal precipitation levels, which isn't high at this point. But your expectation is for that to continue to pile up in that case?
It looks like it. We are getting some disconnect from what's happening now to a lot of the long-range climate models who, quite frankly, have just performed miserably this past 3 or 4 months and really not picking up on actually what's happened. So even though some of the long-range trends in the modeling is drying things out a little bit, it looks like this parade of Pacific storms is going to keep the weather generally wet for a lot of the central and western United States as we head on into the last days of March and into the first half of April.
In the Delta and the Southeast, producers would like to be moving now. Can they, and will they be able to?
Well, I tell you, the Southeast has really cooled off here over the last couple of weeks. Some hard freezes last week, but it's going to be wet. Part of the Delta and those southern areas are going to continue to have rain, along with cooler than average temperatures. So they're going to be delayed a bit.
Okay, thank you much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.